Welcome to Podcasterino. I'm your host, Michael Serber. We're going to recap the 2025 Vuelta a España, the Tour of Spain, today. Been a little while since we put out an episode. Thanks to those of you who are here and stuck around. More episodes on the horizon. But for now, we're going to talk about Jonas Vingegaard getting his, what would this be, his third Grand Tour victory and his second different Grand Tour. So he only lacks now the Giro d'Italia to complete the career treble of winning the Giro, the Tour, and the Vuelta. I would say it's a pretty safe bet that Jonas wins the Giro before his career is up. The big problem that Jonas has with the Giro, which Pogacar was kind of given the opportunity to avoid being in this situation because Jonas beat him twice, right, in the Tour, was he got a chance to go for the Vuelta. Or excuse me, to go for the Giro. And kind of shocked everyone by doing the Giro Tour double when he did it, because he had been beaten 2 years in a row by Jonas and then came back with a Grand Tour already in his legs and beat him. To be fair, Jonas wasn't full strength in last year's Tour. And there was not much of a challenge from Primoz Roglic or Remco Evenepoel for the top spot. So Jonas, on the other hand, he's only lost, he's lost the Tour back-to-back times now, but Visma have no rider other than Jonas, I think, who can compete for the Tour. I think UAE always had in the back of their head, well, if Pogacar shows up to that Tour after the Giro and his legs aren't there, we have João Almeida, who finished second in this year's Vuelta. At the time, they had Juan Ayuso, who's now moved on to Lidl Trek. Well, he's still with UAE for the remainder of the season, but that was a whole, I mean, this season was a nightmare for Juan Ayuso. It makes no sense for him to stay with UAE. So I think that's it's a good move for Juan Ayuso, a really strong Spanish talent. But two, really great for Lidl Trek to have like an out and out leader who should be able to compete for podiums in Grand Tours. But Jonas will, I think, have a hard time convincing Visma to let him go to the Giro. I think this year's the time. And he could have the opportunity to do something very special, which Chris Froome has done, which is, you know, having won the Vuelta now, he could go to the Giro and win the Giro. The thing that Froome wasn't able to complete after winning he won the Tour, and then he won the Vuelta, and then he won the Giro. So he completed all three in a row. Jonas could do it a little different way by winning the Vuelta, then going to the Giro next year, winning the Giro, and then heading to the Tour and attempting to complete three straight Tours that way. To be clear, in other sports, for those of you who are a little bit new to cycling, you know, like the Grand Slam is kind of attainable, even though it's like a huge feat. It is somewhat attainable of winning, you know, the major things all in 1 year, or at least doing it. Maybe if you're not doing it all in 1 year, doing the Tiger Slam way or whatever, winning all four in a row, but not in the same calendar year. Cycling, that does not happen very often. Like, a Grand Tour is so grueling. Jonas, it's like, I have a hard time thinking he'll be ready to go for the Giro in May with this, with a Tour and Vuelta and back-to-back months in his legs. Like, this will take serious recovery time for Jonas. Like, this was Jonas saying, I do not care about the World Championships, not important, I want to get another Grand Tour victory. The, you know, this could be his second Vuelta win, but GC Kuss kind of, for those that don't know, a couple years ago in the Vuelta, Sepp Kuss, an American rider who's probably one of, if not the best lieutenant that Jonas has in the mountains, was kind of given some leash in the race, and that leash led to him getting a couple minutes lead on everyone, including his teammates, and then his teammate Jonas was in a position where he couldn't attack him. No one else had the legs to do anything with such a strong team and such a strong rider like Sepp Kuss, so he kind of won the Vuelta by default because Jonas let him. Not so much this time. Jonas was the clear number one at all times. Now, Sepp Kuss did finish seventh in this race. But Jonas is arguably, you know, the greatest Danish cyclist and of this century. Tough to argue with that, I think. There's a couple names that come up, but like, really good support riders out of Denmark because of Michael Rasmussen's doping issues. he's kind of eliminated from that conversation, even though he did have strong tour performances, you know, at the end of the Lance era and the in-between of the Contador era there. But this, you know, he's the Danish are crazy for cycling, and he's definitely paying off the love they have for the sport. So moving on from Jonas, who I think, you know, will compete for the tour next year, potentially go win the Giro. Joao Almeida coming in second place. This was a big win, I would say, for UAE to get him there and not just be in second, but like he was what, a minute 16? Yeah, a minute 16 down. It's a pretty close result in a grand tour nowadays. You know, you saw what Pogacar was able to do in the tour, and hardly anyone coming within 10 minutes of him. I think there's something to be said for Jonas having a tour that he led in his legs, but, you know, Joao Almeida won the Tour de Suisse this year, won the Tour of the Basque Country, he won the Tour de Romandy, he was second overall at the Vuelta, second at the Volta Algarve, a Portuguese race, second overall at a warm-up Spanish race, Volta a la Comunidad Valenciana, and sixth at Paris-Nice. But it seems like maybe the Paris-Nice run was more to peak for the Tour of the Basque Country. So won both major Swiss stage races this year. It was kind of a big payoff for him. He's finished on the podium of the Giro before in 2023. He's won, you know, World Tour stage races before, Tour of Poland, but really a breakout year for Joao, and I you know, I would hope that they take him to the Giro to win it in 2026. I don't know. I think there'll come a time when Poggi, you know, goes after the Giro again, but a lot of being a leader when you have teammates as good as he has is making sure those guys are satisfied on a regular basis. And Joao Almeida will need to be satisfied. You know, he'll need to lead the team at Paris-Nice or Tirreno Adriatico next year. He'll need to lead the team once again at Tour de Suisse or at the Dauphiné. And he'll need to lead the team again in at least one grand tour. So I think what this does do, though, in the peloton, especially if they bring Almeida to the tour next year, is it creates a situation where you now have two riders that are within striking distance of being able to beat a Jonas, right? Who's really the only object in the way. I do not foresee a situation in which Remco Evenepoel on Red Bull Bora is able to suddenly make up, you know, 10 minutes of mountain climbing, unless they put two or three 70 kilometer time trials in the Tour de France. Third is probably the cap for him. So it's those two. But Joao Almeida, on the other hand, has shown some ability to stay close to a guy like Jonas. So that becomes a weapon that UAE can use now, sending Joao off the front. Tadi can sit the wheel of anybody and let them chase Joao down, because UAE will be perfectly fine with saying, you know, okay, we'll win the Tour de France with Joao Almeida if you're not going to chase him. I think they only care about winning the Tour de France. They probably want to win it with Pogacar, but they're probably okay with winning it with Joao Almeida. So this kind of, one, it opens things up for how long will this guy stay with UAE? Will he go somewhere else? A team like Ineos, who's desperately looking for someone to compete in GC. We saw a really strong performance the first week of the race from Egan Bernal, who's coming back from a horrific crash, to be clear. But he's their highest placed rider at 17th in the Vuelta. So they're very much in a position where they need someone who can do more than just win stages. And with Carlos Rodriguez, with Egan Bernal, even with the Dutch writer's name is escaping me at the moment, but it doesn't seem like they're anywhere ready. And they had a guy in Tom Pidcock who finished third. If we move on in the podium, Tom Pidcock for Q36.5. This is a Pro Tour team, not a World Tour team as well. So that's a big deal for that team to finish on the podium of a Grand Tour. They will get a lot of points, which will help them in their quest to move up to UCI World Tour status. But Tom Pidcock kind of paying off the Grand Tour promise that many hoped he would have, that he could compete for these things. And you know, losing by 3 minutes, 30 seconds to the good of Jai Hindley, who's been right there. And did Jai, you guys have to bear with me. And this is going to be a podcast where I look things up sometimes and spin the wheels, and y'all just are happy to deal with it. Yeah, he won the Giro in 2022. I want to make sure. So he's won a Grand Tour before. To be fair, the 2022 Giro d'Italia, competition-wise, not exactly the greatest. Richard Carapaz finished second. Mikel Landa finished third. Really would have hoped for Mikel Landa to be in better shape for this, but coming back from a really terrible injury, it's easy to see why he struggled as the race went on and wasn't able to get a good result. That being said, some big transfer things. Like I mentioned Juan Ayuso, I mentioned Remco Evenepoel. These things will certainly make things interesting next year. Like Remco with a full team of mountain domestiques, I'm interested to see what that looks like. Jai Hindley, Pellizzari, perhaps Primoz Roglic. There's some firepower on that team, so it'd be interesting to see if he could challenge for maybe that second spot. I've capped him out at third. I think that's kind of the best he can do. I'd be interested to be proven wrong with that with a new team, because Soudal just clearly was not giving him a full deck of cards to deal with in the Grand Tour. They kind of had, especially in the Tour this year, they had kind of their hand in both baskets. One thing that kind of motivated me, or caused me a lack of motivation, I guess, in this Vuelta was the silence on why people were protesting during the race. The lack of acknowledgement of, well, they're protesting because of a genocide from the peloton as a whole, was a little disheartening. There was a lot of selfishness. I feel like there was an opportunity for the peloton to engage with the protesters in a meaningful way, which would have led to the race not being interrupted as much if they would have not taken the stand so early on and they continued to push back every time. There's a genocide. good on the... I don't know much about the government leadership of Spain, so take this with a grain of salt. This guy could be fucking terrible, but I give him props for at least like speaking out about how it's bullshit what Israel's doing to Palestinian people on the Gaza Strip. So Israel Premier Tech being in the race with Israel on their jerseys, the sports washing that's taking place with a team like them, Bahrain victorious, Astana, who's historically been funded by the Kazakh government, UAE Team Emirates, the United Arab Emirates are a major supporter of Joao Almeida's team. Guy finished second. Tadej Pogacar, who's the greatest cyclist in the sport right now. So it's nothing new to cycling. I believe they took Israel off their jerseys at one point, and they seem to be trying to distance themselves, but that means that's... Come on. And that team's best result in this Vuelta was Matthew Riccitiello winning the white jersey, a young American, finishing fifth overall in GC. He's leaving the team, I'm pretty sure, so... Israel Premier Tech is a team where the hits keep coming. Nobody likes you because of your name and who the country you are associated with as a team. Additionally, Chris Froome coming to the team from Team Sky Ineos has been a total failure. He's done nothing. He's shown zero shades of the rider he was before his big crash. So just a giant chunk of money wasted by that team. And now the one young talent that they've been able to build up in GC is going to be leaving them. So I don't see much of a path forward for that team as things go on. The Tour de France is organized by the same organizers essentially as the Vuelta, and the Vuelta organizers did not handle this well. So I don't imagine that ASO will handle this well when it rolls around to June, July next year. I don't know the nature of the Peloton, the countries from which they come, and how that genocide is being reported and talked about there. I only know how it's being talked about here. And it's pretty glaringly obvious that there was an opportunity to take a stand that the Peloton chose not to take. So that was disappointing. As a fan, that's disappointing. So that's the Vuelta. As we look forward to the World Championships, Pogacar's an obvious favorite. I do love Remco for the course. I think it could suit him if he's able to pull one over on Pogacar. He's not going to be able to beat him mano a mano with the legs, but potentially could outfox him. They'll both have really strong teams, but Belgium will likely have the strongest team at the world. So it'll be a kind of role reversal of what you're used to seeing when Remco and Pogacar have faced off this year, where Remco is supremely undermanned. But Pogacar's will be undermanned. In this race. So I have really good teammates. I'm not sure if they're bringing Primoz, but hopefully they're bringing Primoz. If they're bringing Roglic and if they're bringing him, they should be in good shape. So, and Pogacar doesn't need much. As I hate to say, he just doesn't need much help, frankly. But that will be an interesting World Championships. The time trial, I've seen a bit of a drop off from Remco on the time trial this year. So I think he's gettable in the time trial for the World Championships. Also, we'd be asking him to win it was three straight world titles in the time trial. So looking forward to that week. Being disappointed as a fan feels like a pretty normal occurrence so far this college football season. I'm not the Clemson guy that's saying the sky is falling, because I think our two losses are to two very good teams. I think Clemson's issue is what it has been for the past couple seasons, the inability to put four quarters together. Really good at putting together like an end of the half and the beginning of a second half. Really good at putting together one quarter of play where we do so much that we're in the whole game, but have not seen them put four quarters together with Syracuse on the horizon this weekend. You know, things would get bad if they lose that game. At the same time, I'm not like a huge, I don't love everything that Dabo has said in the past. I'm very thankful that we've had, him as a coach as opposed to someone else who probably would have bolted as soon as they had any success. Good on him, though, in the press conference this week. Y'all don't like winning? Get rid of me. That's fine. He has been able to lean on, we've only had one bad season, the 2010 season, since he's been there, and that's true. Now, this season could wind up being that, and then he won't be able to say that anymore, but I think he's been given enough leash that it has to be understood where Clemson is in the landscape. If you fire Dabo, I don't know that you've built up a lot of goodwill with a coach to come to a school that's not going to be easy to win at. I mean, it's easier to win at Clemson than South Carolina because you're in the ACC currently. But I just think it would be a bad move. All the critiques that I've ever had of Dabo, he addresses those things. You know, he hired Garrett Riley after we were like, you need to get a real offensive coordinator. Well, Garrett Riley hasn't really worked out, but is that Dabo's fault? I don't know. I don't think so. He's gone out and got Tom Allen, you know, from Penn State. Stole Penn State's defensive coordinator from them. That's a pretty good move. Before that, he got Brent Venables after we got 70 dropped on us in the Orange Bowl. So he wants to do things a certain way, but he also is very understanding because he's so close with Saban that, like, he's got to do some stuff that maybe he wouldn't naturally think to do. So unless we, you know, whiff in the portal again and, I don't know, win three games this year and three games next year, I think Dabo's pretty safe. I just would like to see more out of the running game and out of the other backs that are on the roster right now besides Adam Randall, who I think is going to be fine. I just don't think he's a guy that needs 20 carries a game, and I think we need to make up a situation where, you know, if he's getting 10, someone else is getting 5, another person is getting 5, the run game being completely predicated on Cade being able to run doesn't seem very good. All right, so Podcast Reno is back. There's a little episode for you. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you enjoy the remainder of the cycling season. I'll be back with another episode soon. Not sure what it'll be about, but we'll drop one in here. For the time being, if you'd like to support my other work, you can listen to Hand in the Dirt, my podcast with Stephen Hartzell and Michael Felder. It's a gardening podcast about football, and really it's a lifestyle podcast. We have t-shirts available for that show at hitd.threadless.com. Additionally, the Shutdown Fullcast is available every week, the midweek show. I'll be on After Dark for the majority of this season as well, which you can catch live. Links are posted on Blue Sky every Saturday night. But you can also sign up for the Patreon, Shutdown Fullcast Patreon. They have a $4 tier and a pay what you want tier, as well as a $100 mega booster tier. So, and then there's Phantom Island, a show I produce for Stephen Godfrey and Ryan Nanny. They also have a midweek show, and you can go to phantomisland.show to find out how to get their exclusive episodes that air every weekend and or every Friday. And then they drop a few other parts of the week as well from time to time. So we're checking out. So check all that out. Subscribe to this podcast if you haven't already so you can get notifications when new episodes are out. Fuck ICE. Free Palestine.